Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today, we're tackling a topic that has personally fascinated me for a long time, Viking burials.
Exactly. And let me say right off the bat, this isn't a gloomy topic. Quite the opposite. The way the Vikings dealt with death tells us an incredible amount about their culture, their values, their entire worldview.
What I find fascinating, we're talking about the Viking Age here, roughly 793 to 1066 AD. That's nearly 300 years, during which a very distinct culture of death developed.
And this culture came from Scandinavia, what is now Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. What you have to understand, the Vikings had a completely different view of death than we do today. For them, it wasn't an ending.
But a transition.
A journey. That word actually captures it quite well. The soul travels onward. And the burial was essentially the, the departure ceremony, complete with all the trappings.
When you compare that to today, we often treat death very privately, almost as a taboo. Small ceremonies, everything very discreet. With the Vikings, it was completely different.
Absolutely. It was a community event. The entire clan gathered together. Stories were told, drinks were shared, mead, sometimes from drinking horns, and the deceased was celebrated, not mourned in the modern sense.
Later on, there was the so-called funeral ale, in Old Norse, erfiöl, a proper feast in honor of the dead, and when it took place, depended on the region and social standing. The community essentially sent the deceased off on their journey.
And what you shouldn't forget, their society was essentially one of long-term clan forget.
Extremely multi-layered.
That's what I mean. We always think immediately of warriors with axes and shields, but the Vikings were equally farmers, traders, craftsmen. And depending on status, depending on role in society, the burial looked quite different.
A simple farmer wasn't buried with a ship. That was reserved for the truly high-ranking individuals. Chieftains, notable warriors, sometimes priestesses.
What's archaeologically documented, the grave goods reflected social status. Weapons, jewelry, tools, everything the deceased would need in the afterlife. In some graves we find hardly anything, in others entire treasures.
You can also see from this how well thought out it all was. They had a complete system behind it. Based on Norse mythology.
Mythology did play an important role. The belief in Odin, in Valhalla, in the various afterlife realms. But how someone was actually buried, which rituals were performed, that depended just as much on status, regional traditions, and the time period.
And it also explains why this still fascinates us today. This blend of ritual, spirituality and social order, you rarely find that so pronounced.
In films and TV shows, this is often depicted. Those burning ships being sent out to sea. That's certainly dramatic staging, but there's hardly any archaeological evidence for it. In reality, ships were mostly used as graves on land. The ship symbolized status and maritime identity, rather than being set ablaze on water.
What always impresses me, fire was probably interpreted as purifying and transformative. The fire didn't destroy, but liberated. Whether it also served as a guide for the soul can't be said with certainty, but the symbolism is powerful.
That's a beautiful image. And it makes clear that many of these beliefs probably offered comfort. Though attitudes toward death were certainly varied, not everyone was completely fearless.
Although there was also fear. of the Draugr, for example, the undead revenants. But that's perhaps material for later.
Definitely. First, let's look at the different types of burials that existed, because there's quite a lot to discover.
Let's start directly with the most famous but also rarest type, ship burials. They are a central part of the modern Viking image.
The classic image from film and television.
Exactly. But full-scale ship burials, meaning over 20 meters, were actually extremely rare. That was the absolute exception, reserved for the elite. Chieftains, queens, high-ranking warriors. Smaller boat graves were more common, but the grand ships? We only know of a handful per country.
And when you consider how elaborate such a ship was, the Oseberg ship, for example, excavated in 1904 in Norway, it was over 21 meters long and about 5 meters wide. A ceremonial ship of great splendor.
And two women were buried inside it.
An older woman, according to more recent examinations, even around 70 to 80 years old. Probably a queen or noblewoman. And another woman, about 50 to 55 years old. Possibly a companion or relative. Over 200 grave goods were found there. Carved sleds, an elaborately decorated wagon, looms, textiles.
From that, you can see how much effort was invested. But only for the truly important people. The ordinary farmer or trader didn't get a ship.
No, far from it. That would be like everyone today being buried in a mausoleum.
Then there were the burial mounds, which were
already much more widespread.
These grave mounds had elevated positions in the landscape, often strategically placed, highly visible. A sign. Someone important is buried here.
The height of the mound and the quantity of grave goods, that said everything about status. Jewelry, weapons, everyday objects. In Sweden, entire burial fields with such mounds have been discovered.
And then the most common form, the cremations. Those were really widespread, especially in the early Viking age.
Fire had that symbolic meaning. Purification, liberation of the soul. The smoke was probably interpreted as a connection upward.
The funeral pyre had to get really hot. The fire burned for several hours. The ashes were then collected, interred in urns, pits, or under burial mounds. The matter of scattering ashes in waters, that's known from the sagas, like in Balder's funeral in the Edda, but there's no archaeological evidence for it.
What's interesting is that the practices varied by region. Different in Denmark than in Norway, and different again in the Baltic region.
And over time, there were shifts too. Early Viking Age, predominantly cremations. Later, with the influence of Christianity from the 10th century onward, inhumations became more common.
Which shows how dynamic this culture was.
No rigid rules, but adaptation to circumstances, to status, to regional traditions. A coastal dweller with access to ships had different options than someone inland.
Speaking of options, if topics like these interest you and you want to learn more about Viking culture, feel free to leave a like and subscribe to the channel. That helps us tell even more of these stories.
What I find particularly fascinating, the type of burial was like a final message to the community. It said something about the person, about their place in society.
A simple farmer was cremated or also buried uncremated, depending on region and time. A warrior received his weapons. And for someone like the women in the Osebeck ship, an entire fortune was placed in the grave.
Although the ship itself was also a message, a powerful symbol of status and seafaring. Perhaps also intended as a metaphorical journey to the afterlife.
The Gokstar ship, another famous find, even contained a tent as a grave good. Practical for the journey, you might say.
This attention to detail shows how seriously the Vikings took the afterlife. It wasn't just symbolism. They truly believed the deceased would need these things.
And precisely this conviction leads us to the rituals themselves. Because before someone was buried, there were elaborate preparations and ceremonies. Now it gets personal. Because before any burial could take place, there were elaborate preparations. The first step was washing the deceased.
And that wasn't simply about hygiene. The washing was considered a cleansing, symbolic, almost spiritual. They were preparing the soul for its journey.
Family members probably took care of this. Whether specifically women, we don't know for certain. Even Ibn Fadlan, our most detailed source, only mentions women sewing, not washing. The body was washed, the hair combed, and then came the clothing. Often the finest clothing the deceased owned. Sometimes new garments were even made specifically for the burial.
That reminds me of today, honestly. We also dress the deceased in dignified clothing, often a suit or their favourite dress. This tradition has survived for over 1,000 years.
That's true. Respect for the dead is expressed through outward appearance as well. After the preparations, the wake began, and it was anything but quiet and somber.
The community came together.
The entire clan, friends, neighbors, they gathered around the deceased and told stories. Stories about their life, about shared experiences, about heroic deeds, or even funny anecdotes.
That's, as we said at the beginning, so different from how we deal with death today. With us, it's more private, in small circles. The Vikings, well, celebrated might be the wrong word, but they bore it as a community.
And they drank mead from drinking horns, sometimes for days. It wasn't a funeral service in the modern sense, but rather a farewell feast. They honored the deceased by celebrating that they had lived.
Music probably played a role too, though we have little concrete evidence for that. Ibn Fadlan, who described a Rus burial around 922, mentions wailing and lamentation, but no music as such. Whether there were formal songs is therefore hard to say.
The emotional component was enormous. Even though we don't know exactly how, whether through songs, lamentations, or simply quiet togetherness, the community came together to give the deceased strength on their final journey. That's
incredibly powerful.
And then, at special burials, there were also animal sacrifices. Important to note, this wasn't the norm at every funeral.
For high-ranking individuals or particularly wealthy families, the sacrificed animals, often horses, dogs, sometimes birds of prey, were meant to accompany the deceased into the afterlife.
A loyal horse that wouldn't leave its master even after death. The hunting dog that would remain at their side. That was the thinking. Practical companions for life after death.
And at the same time, an offering to the gods. They sacrificed something valuable to win favor with Odin or Freya.
With the grave goods, it became even clearer how they imagined the afterlife. There were
weapons for warriors.
Swords, axes, spears. Jewelry for women and men. Household items like pots, tools, looms.
Everything were needed in daily life. The Vikings thought the deceased would actually use these things in the afterlife. It wasn't symbolism. It was practical provision.
The quantity and quality of the grave goods, of course, said a lot about status. A simple farmer might receive a knife and a comb. A chieftain was buried with an entire arsenal.
Many graves had some grave goods, but by no means all. Especially later, when Christian influence grew stronger, there were also graves with none at all. But where grave goods are present, it becomes clear how deeply this concept was anchored in society.
What always touches me, these objects were chosen with care. The favorite tool, the jewelry someone always wore, it was a final act of caring.
A message to the deceased. We're looking after you, even now.
And that leads us directly to the question, where did this journey actually go? What did the Vikings believe happened after death?
The Vikings had a fascinating conception of the afterlife. And I have to say right away, it was more complicated than just Valhalla.
That's the point that often gets overlooked. Everyone knows Valhalla, but there were multiple afterlife realms.
Valhalla was the Hall of the Fallen, Odin's realm. The brave warriors who died in battle went there. And there they spent their time with, how should I put it, eternal feasting and fighting.
During the day they fought each other. In the evening they sat together at the feast. And the next morning it all started again. For a warrior, that was paradise.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
But here's the crucial point. Not everyone went to Valhalla. That was only for those who fell in battle, weapon in hand, so to speak.
And what about everyone else? The farmers, traders, the people who died peacefully in bed?
They went to hell. And now it gets interesting. Hell wasn't what we understand today as hell. That's a widespread misconception.
The Christian concept later overlaid it.
Hell was the realm of the goddess of the same name, a daughter of Loki. And it was, well, not the Christian hell. Rather dark, cold, and damp. A bleak place of oblivion, where the dead led a shadowy existence. No torment, no punishment.
So, more like a quiet shadow realm.
You could see it that way. For most Vikings, hell was probably the more likely destination. And that was accepted. Not everyone wanted to spend eternity fighting.
And then there was also...
Folkvanger.
Yes, that's so often forgotten. Freya's realm.
Freya, the goddess of love and war, had her own afterlife realm. And according to the sources, she shared the fallen warriors with Odin. She received half.
Half? That means not all warriors automatically went to Odin.
In the Edda, specifically Gylfaginning 24, it says that Freya chose half of the fallen, as many as Odin. How exactly the division worked isn't stated there, but it underscores how important her role was, often more important than we think today.
Why is that so rarely mentioned? In films and series, it's always just Valhalla.
Because Valhalla is more dramatic, I suppose. A hall full of fighting warriors makes for better viewing than Freya's blooming meadows. But historically, Folkvanger was equally significant.
And these beliefs were directly reflected in the burials. Thor's hammer, for example, that was frequently found as a grave good.
Mjölnir, Thor's hammer. Many Vikings wore it as a protective amulet in life, and took it with them to the grave. It was meant to protect the deceased on their journey.
Archaeologists have discovered hundreds of these pendants in graves, made of bronze, silver, sometimes iron. Here it becomes clear how deeply this belief was anchored across all social classes.
although we need to be careful with generalizations. Not all Vikings believed the same things.
Regional differences.
Different in Norway than in Denmark. Different again in Iceland. And over the 300 years of the Viking Age, beliefs also changed, especially as Christianity gained influence.
In some regions, there were hybrid forms, Christian and pagan elements side by side. You even find Thor's hammer amulets with cross decorations, like the famous silver example from Hedeby from the 10th century.
That shows how pragmatic the Vikings sometimes were. Why not please both gods if you want to play it safe?
The afterlife beliefs were ultimately about hope. The hope that death is not the end, that you can live on. Whether in Odin's hall, with Freya, or in the quiet realm of Hel.
And this hope was expressed in every ritual, in every gravegood, in every shared hour at the wake. The Vikings truly prepare their dead for a journey, not symbolically, but quite concretely.
And thanks to archaeology, we can get a glimpse of these preparations today. The finds tell stories that would otherwise be lost.
Now we come to the archaeological finds that have made this knowledge possible in the first place. We already touched on it earlier, but first and foremost is the Oseberg ship, one of the most spectacular finds in Viking archaeology.
That was discovered in 1903 and then excavated from 1904, right?
Exactly, on a farm near Tönsberg. And what the archaeologists found there was breathtaking. A magnificently decorated ship as a burial site for two women.
Two women. That's remarkable. The older woman we mentioned earlier was probably around 80 years old, much older than originally thought, and the younger one around 50. Newer bone analysis only revealed that in 2007. Exactly who they were is still debated today.
Possibly a queen or priestess with a servant, or relatives. What we know for certain, the grave goods were incredibly rich. Textiles, tapestries, sleds, an elaborately carved wagon, household items, looms, even animal sacrifices.
The carvings on the ship itself are legendary. Those intricate animal patterns, the dragon heads. All of it testifies to a level of craftsmanship that still impresses us today.
And the Gokstad ship, the other famous find from Norway, was quite different. Also a ship burial, but for a high-ranking man. There they found weapons, tools, and even a tent as a grave good.
With the tent, the man was well equipped for his journey. Shelter along the way. The Gokstad ship was actually more seaworthy than the Oseberg ship. It was probably actually used for voyages before it became a grave.
In Sweden, we then have the burial mounds. Entire burial fields, often situated on hilltops. Jewelry, weapons, everyday objects. Each grave tells a story about the person who lies there.
What fascinates me about this, through the arrangement of the graves and the types of grave goods, archaeologists today can draw conclusions about entire communities. Who stood where in the hierarchy? Which families were related?
And these finds have also influenced our modern
pop culture tremendously.
That's what I was about to say. Films, series, books, Viking burials appear everywhere.
The burning ships on the water, the dramatic farewells. That's of course often heavily romanticized, as we've already noted.
But the images are memorable. And they've contributed to the Vikings being so present in the modern imagination.
In art and design too, you can see the influence. The animal patterns from the Oseberg ship continue to inspire jewelry designers and artists to this day. This aesthetic has endured.
And archaeology itself has benefited from the Viking graves. New methods for conserving wood and textiles were developed,
because people wanted to preserve these unique finds.
Science grows with its challenges.
Indeed. And what remains at the end? What do these burials tell us about the Vikings?
They reveal a culture that didn't fear death, but viewed it as a natural transition, that treated their dead with respect and care.
A society with clear structures, where status was visible even in death, but also a society where the community came together to say farewell collectively.
And above all, people who believed in something greater, in a journey that continues, in an afterlife worth reaching.
Viking burials are ultimately a window into a world that seems both foreign and familiar to us. Foreign in its rituals, familiar in the emotions behind them. The grief, the hope, the love for those who have passed.
That connects us across 1,000 years.
And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. If you enjoyed the topic, on the Battle Merchant blog, you'll find many more articles about Viking culture and other historical subjects.
Thanks for joining us. Until next time.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your swords sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.